You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Catherine Burke. Catherine, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So, of course, we're talking about your show, House Tree Person, running through May 9th at DDDD Gallery in Manhattan. And there's paintings, there's sculpture, there's a video in here. I feel like we should start with a video just because there's an unusual narrative happening there, right? It colors the exhibit, or maybe we should start with, like, what is the relationship of the video in there to the rest of the exhibit?
Yeah, I mean, I think the video is a good place to start. It's ultimately an exhibition about, like, self-mythology and sort of my relationship and sort of grappling with domesticity as a trans woman, what that looks like, sort of what options are afforded to me, the sort of like history of this. So I made the video as the sort of central like mythological text for the entire exhibition. So it's like a cooking show pastiche, where I'm in my studio. I am sort of in the midst of like conjuring sort of spirits or whatever. It's a little witchy. Lighting candles and then sort of reciting recipes and summoning, I guess, myself as a bust.
And so what we're talking about here is, you talked about domesticity, right? This video is a number of things, right? Some, as you're describing, you know, not clear narrative, somewhat mystifying, or so, you know, mythology is a good idea there. But we're also, the central idea is domesticity as a trans woman, right? What does that mean? Can we talk a little bit more about that? Meaning, domesticity in what sense? Like, what does it mean to build a home, to make a nest, or how are you defining the role of domesticity?
Yeah.
And how you would fit into it, or the difficulty of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think like domesticity is sort of it's a big thing to talk about, and oftentimes I find it kind of annoying to hear and listen about. So I guess it's kind of funny to actually talk about it, but I am sort of like, for the past year and a half that I've been working on this show, I've been sort of facing the, like, I guess the realities of being a trans person, trans woman specifically, in the US. I'm in Chicago, which is, you know, a pretty good spot to be, all things considered. But there are sort of a lot of pressures that come with this, you know, in relationships and figuring out what a house looks like, figuring out what a home looks like to me, thinking about it sort of relationally, thinking about myself as sort of a custodian of a space, the space that I'm sort of in charge of. So a lot about nesting. And creating this space to, I guess, sort of fully be myself and explore sort of any manifestations of myself that come up. And I'm doing that a lot by, I'm doing that by thinking about sort of like domestic icons. So in the video, the two, I guess, main figures are Striganona, the character from, it's a children's book, but it's also, like, I guess, like folklore at this point. And then, like, the generic ideal of a Food Network host. So I'm coming at domesticity as, from a place of, like, I guess, care for the space that I'm in, sort of sustenance and maintenance of like my own physical health, emotional health, and then anybody else that sort of comes into my home space.
Yeah, thanks for sharing all that. That makes sense to me, and is powerful because, right, as a trans woman, what it means to be domestic has a number of layers. There's what you're doing with a partner in terms of building a home, but as you're saying, it's also something deeply personal, right? It's like what you want to do. How do you want to, you know, do you want to be the kind of cooking show host, right? That's like a sort of an extreme example of domesticity, right? The person who's showing you how to essentially make your home, right? I was always struck by a friend of my sister's who said, "Oh, you know, your mother," meaning my mother, who's no longer living, "showed me how to set up a kitchen." And I remember thinking, like, what, you know, I get it, but I wasn't taught to set up a kitchen. And there's something to that, right? Like, what does it mean? You have certain jars out where the spices, you know, and that's like an example, isn't it? Would you call that an example of kind of domesticity, right? It's physical. It's about how the nest is designed and used.
Yeah, I definitely, and I think I'm interested in seeing it as a sort of communally built nest, or a nest that, you know, we're drawing on, like, you know, grandmas, moms, ancestors by blood, sort of adopted ancestors, in the case of, you know, like being a trans woman and sort of trying to sculpt what womanhood is to me. So looking at these people, these sort of influences to, I guess, color how that home is built. Essentially trying to like situate like domesticity and domestic labor as like a communal practice, and a less private than it seems process.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And so to talk about other works in the show, we're just talking about the video, of course, and then there's a series of paintings and sculptures, paintings with sculptural elements on them. There's one called Dam for Morandi, and this is oil acrylic wax and dragon skin silicon. Can you tell me a little bit about this? This is a white painting, and then there's sculptures on it that are cold wax. I don't know what dragon skin silicon is, but that's a really interesting sounding term. Yeah, let's talk about this, because these look almost like suitcases there on this white background that I know in other paintings has been referred to as a blizzard, though it may mean something else here.
Yeah. So in the dam paintings, my idea originally was to make a series of paintings that are abstracting decorative air register grates. So like the little vent grates in the wall that blow out hot air, cool air. But thinking about these spaces as like porous barriers between like infrastructure and like HVAC and sort of mechanical and then domestic. So like the, I guess, affective or like felt experience of being in a warm room. So I was looking at a lot of more decorative panels or grates for these panels. There's eight. There's a couple that are classic stripe, up and down, horizontal, like vertical slats, horizontal slats. The one for Morandi is sort of like a basket weave pattern, and these patterns are all arrived at through like a net stencil process. In the other paintings, I'm using netting to stretch over the surface canvas and then burying that net under like 20 or 30 layers of paint and using it as a structural support to find the image. In the dams, it is just paint. There's no net, but I laid a stencil out, manipulated it so that there's some sort of warp and directional movement, and then I just traced that, and then I repeated that process over and over and over again, like 15 layers of paint. The final step was doing some hand cut and strip framed all of those paintings, simple sort of like construction material and copper nails. And then there are the object inclusions. So the one, the Dam for Mirandi, they are little dollhouses scaled to dollhouses. So it's like a doll, 1/12 scale dollhouse, a dollhouse for a dollhouse. I made a mold of that, and then I cast. I think there's like maybe 10 on there. It's a very heavy painting. It's a very bottom heavy painting because they're all sort of sitting there at the bottom. And then they are stacked and rotated in a similar way that like the grid pattern, in a similar way that I arrive at the grid pattern. And this one specifically is referencing the little bottle paintings by Giorgio Morandi, the little still lives. I think he's one of my favorite painters. I teach drawing and I show him to my students far too often, so I think that they're probably tired of seeing these little vases and bottles. But there was a relationship to the bottles that he painted that was formed over years and years and years of doing the same thing, painting the same bottles. And I wanted to sort of mimic that repetition and mimic that still life with these little dollhouses.
Yeah, that's I love hearing about that because it's such an involved process, right? I mean, what you're talking about, and I'm so glad we're talking about processes. This is something that obviously you built up to over a while. It's a very, very involved process from beginning to end in terms of just pure labor, right?
Yes. Too much so.
And then there's, I wanted to talk about Hutt. There's a number of Hutt paintings in here, but there's Hutt for Strega Nona, which, you know, I love hearing about. That was a book that I was read to as a kid, and something so cool about her. And so this one is cast beeswax slabs, and there's herbs and essential oils on here. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this one, because this is really kind of a complex work, seems to reference this sort of... which, you know, aspect of Strega Nona, right? Conjurer, healer, you know, cooking, which I suppose also references domesticity, as you're saying. But this is unusual, right? This is a big installation. We have what look like claws or fingers holding these all up. And they're all, they're using a material that none of the others, as far as I know, are using, which is beeswax and all these herbs.
So beeswax is like it's hidden in every single work. It's sort of the material that threads through all of the paintings, all of the dams, all the huts. This big installation. It's a big part of the video, because the video is essentially me making these slabs for this big installation. But they are, I think there's 25 or 26 or 27, I don't remember exactly how many, 11 by 14, like about an inch, maybe inch and a half thick slabs. They're just beeswax, different colors of beeswax, which is intentional and also sort of by chance. I ordered the same, there's like white beeswax and there's yellow beeswax. The yellow beeswax is really like poppy, pungent yellow. And the white beeswax is supposed to be white, or like a really soft yellow, but it came to me in all these sort of variations of green, so it gave me this really nice warm palette to work with when I'm arranging them into this larger installation. There's dried herbs and essential oils in each slab. Rosemary, thyme, sage, oregano, and basil. And this was just sort of a classic Italian seasoning blend. Thinking about stregonona, thinking about making a sort of Italian food cooking show. And then doing this process of making these slabs to make a, you know, it's like a, I think 7 feet tall. So it's not like a full size house, but, you know, maybe the size of like a little playhouse that you'd put in the backyard. And it's the same hut pattern or house pattern that's in all of the hut paintings. Which is just a little abstracted, simplified, very geometric rendering of the houses, simple houses that we draw when we're kids, the little boxes with triangles for roofs, sort of played across the series. Like, I think there's 7 or 8, maybe 6 to 8 paintings, hut paintings, and this form is sort of played with across each of them, and repeated ultimately in this large installation. It's held up on the wall with cast rubber fingers, which are taken from molds of my own fingers, wearing the little plastic prosthetic, like witch fingers that you can get for like $1 at the Halloween store.
Yeah, I love this work. It kind of seems to come alive almost. You know, there's something about it that, very, very, very exciting. I mean, it is, as you've said before, a kind of part of domesticity, right? In this instance, it's almost like you are Strega. No, you're you're kind of you're making all these recipes. It's a type of alchemy, a cooking, really, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's like, there's a clear analogy between like a recipe and making a painting. Specifically, how I made these paintings is very much, there's a set sort of process of, I'm going to do X amount of coats of gesso, I'm going to do X amounts of coats of acrylic paint, and then like X amount of oil and wax. So very formulaic. So I wanted to bring that into a sort of installational moment, and also try to activate the space with the smell of the beeswax. Because the beeswax itself has a little bit of smell, but then the herbs give off a nice sort of like floral, like warmth that I think is really evocative of being cozy at home.
Yeah, I like that so much. One last one I wanted to talk about is hut interference. And this one has a different kind of color in it. It's similar to the others, but also something different is happening here. There's pink around the edge, black and red squares lined by color, and also two different shades of white. A number of things happening here in terms of colors and hues and also space. This is quite different than the others we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that painting. That was a sort of fun revelation in the process. It is just it's wax, just sort of straight up cold wax medium, which is just beeswax and Gamsol, which is a painting medium, mixed together. But it dries matte, and it's very, very smooth. It's very sort of luscious. It's very sexy. To sort of get there's the hut shape in the middle, which is almost a one-to-one of the hut for Stregonona. And they're sort of positioned right across from each other in the gallery, so I like that sort of reference, just directly across from each other. But it is in the wax for that. I mixed in some interference violet pigment, so from dead on, it sort of takes on this taupey, creamy color, and then sort of as you move from one side to the other, as it catches light, it deflects or reflects this nice little lavender, which I think is a little, like, I mean, a little magical, just based on, I don't know, not being a science person and seeing this happen and being like, oh, whoa, this is really cool. But the colors in that painting were definitely different, and a little bit of a departure. The previous paintings that I made before this show, and throughout the past like couple years, very colorful, very fluorescent, bright, poppy. In the paintings for this show, I wanted to try and dial that back and try and work with this sense of color that I've developed over the past couple years of like sort of intense painting, intense thinking about painting. And I wanted to make like a white painting kind of, and ended up with this little taupey creamy moment, which I think is really lovely when it catches the light and reflects back that lavender color.
Yeah, I think so too. A beautiful sense of color there. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. I hope that listeners will follow the links and go see the show. It's up to May 9th, almost another month from the recording of this interview. Catherine, I want to thank you so much for your time today and putting together this beautiful show. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for talking to me about it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.